Do we have an ETA on the arrival of those bots?
9 days from tonight! 9 days from tonight!
All right, Tony, calm down.
9 days from tonight! On dynamite! Live on dynamite!
Control yourself!
It's business time, baby.
You are listening to Solo Monster Sounds Off.
It's such good shit.
Mama Monster.
Conquered. I'm home.
You like fighting a woman?
You're saying Vince McMahon is stupid. Is that what you're saying?
Oh my God, we're only an hour in. We have two more hours of this.
SmackDown sucks. It's almost as bad as Raw.
Who writes this stuff? Bruce?
Come over here and fight me.
I'm the Solo Monster, damn it.
Solo Monster, who are you to doubt El Dandy?
As we await the pending bot invasion, this is episode 751 of the Solo Monster Sounds Off for Sunday, April 10th, 2022. I am the Solo Monster. I surrender myself to our bot overlords. I hope I don't say anything to piss them off this week. You want to get yourself a free audiobook? What do? You go to audibletrial.com/solomonster. That's what you do. You sign up for a 30-day trial and you get yourself that book, whatever book you want. Just use our link. Might I suggest Beat the Bots? That is a book on there that you can buy, Beat the Bots, or A Boy and His Bot. How about Z-Bot? Z-Bot looked kind of interesting when I looked it up. It says, orphaned, fostered, and drifting through life, Chris Johnson had no family, little money, and few friends, but he also had no enemies, so who the hell killed him? After an experimental process brings him back from the dead as a zombie bot, he gets the chance to find out. Heather Logan's latest process uses nanobots to reanimate a corpse, half robot, half something raised from the dead. Chris is her first successful resuscitation. Is it truly alive? Is it a machine? Or some kind of zombie hybrid? You're going to tell me that doesn't sound interesting. Yes, I am going to address the Tony Khan stuff, as well as WWE releasing Nash Carter from NXT. We'll talk about what the plan is for the now vacant NXT Tag Team Championship. And Tammy Sitch, I mean, I knew this was coming. I knew this was coming, and it didn't have to be this way. So we got a lot to get into. If you want to make a PayPal donation and support the show, you may do so. On thesolomonster.com, you'll see the text link right there at the top of the page, staring you right back in the face. $10 or more will get you a nickname and a shout-out. I want to say thank you to awesome Anthony Anguiano, who says that, while most people go to church on Sundays, my Sunday worship is listening to the Solomonster Sounds Off. That's right. Can I get an amen? Thank you, Anthony. John Loose Cannon Lopez, happy belated birthday to Loose Cannon. He celebrated his birthday on Thursday. I hope it was a great one. The Portland pop star Paul Hamilton, Night Stalker Nayef Al-Safar, Big B Brian Pesera, Out of Control Cody Thomas, Killshot Keith Hart, the Chicago Slayer Willie Eicher, the Diamond Dallas Dance Machine Harrison Soep, Ostentatious Alan Carter, Velvet Revolver Robert Murray, New York Punk, Arnold Modesto, John Raging Mad Riffle, the Wichita Workhorse, Clayton Nettleton, Iowan Corn Farmer, Jesse Lampier, Shin Superkick Akuma, you might recognize Shin Akuma from the YouTube channel, the Vegemite Delight, Benjamin Cathery, and I've never eaten Vegemite before, so my question is, does it taste any good? I have heard that it is an acquired taste, but I've never had any Vegemite in my life. And Rick wants to wish his friend Aaron a happy 33rd birthday, one of the biggest wrestling fans that he knows, and he is one of his very best friends. So from Rick to Aaron, a very happy birthday. There will be no live stream on Friday night, just a quick programming note. No live stream on the YouTube channel. I will be at the House of Glory show, which is titled Tribulations. At the NYC Arena, we've got the Briscoes, the House of Glory Tag Team Champions, taking on the team of Jeff Cobb and TJP. We've got the newly crowned Impact Knockouts Champion, Tasha Steelz, challenging Natalia Markova for the House of Glory Women's Championship. Low-Ki defends his crown jewel title in a triple threat match against Charles Mason and Cashflow Ken Broadway. And the Amazing Red, after months on the shelf, the Amazing Red is back in action, defending his six-way cruiserweight title against five other men. I believe this one is going to be on Fight TV, I believe. Tickets are still available, though, at hogwrestling.net if you want to stop by. Come on down, don't be a stranger, and say hello. 2 months ago, on Sound Off 745, I talked about Tammy Sitch and her latest run-in with the law. She's had many of them over the years. And I even joked at the time that if this woman spends any more time behind bars, she's going to have to start making mortgage payments on her cell. But that would imply that she was actually behind bars, which has not been the case recently. She's been behind bars in the past, but more recently she has not been incarcerated. And now one person is dead as a result. And sadly, I knew it would come to this. I said as much on that same episode. You all knew it too. My greatest fear in this was not that she would hurt herself. It was that she would end up hurting an innocent party that had nothing to do with any of this. Per an article in the Ormond Beach Observer in Florida, Sitch was involved in a fatal three-car crash on US 1 on March 25th. For whatever reason, this did not make the news or get picked up until just this week. And police say the ongoing investigation may result in criminal charges. The report states that Tamara Sitch, better known by her ring name Sunny, failed to stop at around 8:28 p.m., while driving what, according to TMZ, was a 2012 Mercedes, southbound on US 1 just north of Grenada Boulevard, and crashed into a stopped vehicle, a 2013 Kia Sorento, which then crashed into the vehicle in front of it, which was a 2011 GMC Yukon. Cops say that two witnesses said Sitch was driving at a high rate of speed before hitting the Kia. The driver of the vehicle hit by Sitch, identified as 75-year-old Julian LaFrancis Lassiter of Daytona Beach Shores, was transported to Halifax Health Medical Center, where he was pronounced dead. Sitch was also transported to Halifax Health for treatment, but was later released. You know, it always seems to work that way, doesn't it? When you hear stories like this, someone gets plowed into by somebody, they don't even have to be drunk, and the driver usually walks away with barely a scratch. But the person they smashed into is killed. Too many stories like that. Far too many stories like that. And the story says that a search warrant was approved and executed to obtain a blood sample from Sitch, which police are using to investigate if she was impaired at the time of the crash. And the cops believe that she was under the influence of alcohol at the time, but toxicology results are still pending. The driver and the passengers in the third vehicle suffered injuries but were not transported to the hospital. Only a few hours before this accident took place on the 25th, Sitch was on Twitter and she posted a picture of herself with the message, "Well, assholes, since my name has been towards the top of the kill list for the past 20 years and I'm still fucking alive, shit, my autograph is worth more now. So once I do croak, you can sell it for a lot more money. Come see me out at a signing." When I read this story, like I'm sure a lot of you, it made me very angry. Nearly 20 times in the past decade, this woman has been arrested or otherwise in some kind of trouble with the law. Not 2 months ago. 2 months ago. I talked about this woman being hit by 11 charges in New Jersey. 11! Including at least her sixth, or either DUI or DWI, in the past 3 years alone. And those are just the ones that we know about. Those are just the ones that were either, you know, public knowledge or reported on in the media. Those are the ones that we know about. Who knows how many other times she was out drunk or intoxicated and didn't get into an accident and managed to actually, you know, not kill anybody before she went back home. Who knows? Scary to think about, isn't it? These are just the ones that she's got popped for. She got hit with 11 charges in New Jersey not 2 months ago. DUI, driving with a suspended or revoked license, reckless driving, careless driving, likely to endanger person or property. driving without a license, her second violation for operating a vehicle during a license suspension, failure to install an ignition interlock. The list goes on and on. That followed an arrest in January for making terroristic threats and unlawful possession of a weapon when she tried to stab, I guess it was her boyfriend, I guess, at the time, with a pair of scissors. I said it then, and I'll say it now. This woman is a menace to society. And to herself. But more important, to society. To the rest of us. She has no business getting behind the wheel of a car, regardless of what other information might come out about this case. And she has no business being anywhere but locked away behind bars. And the fact that she wasn't already behind bars is a colossal failure of our system. I was listening the other day to Carl Stern on the Observer website. I wanted to get his perspective because here's a guy who has spent more than 30 years in law enforcement. And I know he does, you know, the occasional podcast on that website. And I saw that he had talked about this, and I wanted to get his perspective on things. And as he said, in many states, there simply is no mechanism to lock up somebody for driving without a license or for driving with a suspended license. The cops can't do anything about it, and neither can the judges. And he's right. You know, judges are not there to lock people up. Their only job is to interpret and apply the existing laws as they are currently on the books. Laws that differ from state to state. So the laws in New Jersey will be different than Florida. The laws in Florida will be different than Alabama, which is where he's from, and I believe he's worked in law enforcement. So it varies from state to state. That is why this woman is still allowed to walk free. Legislators are the ones who make the laws. So maybe we need to do a better job of electing people who can actually pass common sense legislation. You would think that this is something everybody could get on the same page with, that everybody could agree on, but the way our system is today, you know, I don't think these people could agree on what to order for fucking lunch. I don't know what bond restrictions she may or may not have had stemming from the last incident. It's entirely possible that had this happened in the state of New Jersey and not Florida, she might actually be locked up right now. But it didn't. It didn't happen in New Jersey. If the toxicology reports come back positive for alcohol and she is above the legal limit, it's also possible that it would only count as her first offense. I don't remember offhand if any of the other times she got caught for DUI, if any of those were in Florida. If not, it's possible it would count as her first offense, as opposed to her sixth or seventh or eighth. Think of the absurdity of this. Absolute lunacy. Alcohol or no alcohol, this woman was driving without a license. She should not have been on the road. Period. You know, the stuff last time about the ignition interlock device, and I talked about, you know, what that is and all that, that she was supposed to have it and she didn't, or it won't let you operate the car if you breathe into it and it detects liquor on your breath or liquor at a certain level. You know, what good does something like that even do if you get behind the wheel of somebody else's car? Or if you get a friend to blow into it who isn't drunk? Nothing. It does nothing. All of these rules, all of these stipulations, and none of them mean a goddamn thing. And the scary part is that this woman is still free right now to get behind the wheel if she wants to. There is nothing to stop her. You know, I said previously, this woman is never going to learn until somebody gets killed. Well, somebody did get killed. But that statement was not accurate that I made. She won't ever learn. Even after this, even after she put somebody in the ground out of pure selfishness, she will not learn her lesson. There is no helping this woman. She is beyond help. Arrest after arrest, parole granted, parole revoked. All the time that she did spend behind bars, it made no difference. It made no difference. And never, not once, and here's the other thing, not once has she ever appeared contrite about her actions or remorseful in any way or regretful. She goes on social media and she behaves like it never happened. And she goes after people because she doesn't care. She's selfish. So her story is not going to have a happy ending. The only question is, how many more people is she going to take down with her along the way? My only hope is that this time the charges stick and she gets locked up for an extended period of time. I would call it a period of reflection for her, but again, I don't think she's ever going to change. I think it goes beyond addiction with this woman. I think it's just who she is. You know, I don't think anybody is dumb enough. I would hope that nobody listening to this is dumb enough to offer any excuses for this woman. There are no excuses. She deserves no sympathy. None. There are people with addiction issues out there. There might be some people listening to this right now who either have or in the past have had addiction issues, whether it's drugs, alcohol, whatever it might be, who do deserve sympathy, who do want to change and made the effort to try or would like to, who recognize they have a problem and want to do something about it, and who don't put other people's lives, even if they are dealing with that and they're doing stuff that they shouldn't be doing and they know it, they're not putting other people's lives needlessly at risk every time they walk out their front door. There are people who want to be helped, and then there is Tammy Sitch. This woman is not some tragic figure. She's pathetic. And if anybody deserves sympathy, it's the family of the man that she killed. Imagine if that was your father, your grandfather, your husband, your brother, your friend. How would you feel? Now, the man's obituary said that he used to be a math teacher many years ago, and that he gave many people a leg up. He saw helping people as his life's mission. And he's survived by his daughter. He had two grandkids. He had a brother. I hope I never have to read another obituary ever again for someone who had the great misfortune of crossing paths with this woman. And that maybe, just maybe, justice might actually be served for once. But one thing I would not call this is a fall from grace. What a tragic fall for this woman. A fall from grace. In order to fall from grace, just remember, you have to have grace in the first place. Last weekend at Stand and Deliver, MSK regained the NXT Tag Team titles in a three-way match over Imperium and the Creed Brothers. This was in spite of allegations that had been levied earlier against one half of MSK, Nash Carter, of domestic abuse by his wife, pro wrestler Kimberly, who is currently under contract with Impact Wrestling. MSK even appeared on Tuesday's NXT show. But the very next day, Sean Ross Sapp of Fightful.com broke the news that Carter had been released by WWE. And on Friday, WWE announced that the current NXT Tag Team Champions, who they never named, they just referred to them as the current NXT Tag Team Champions, have relinquished the titles. New champions will be crowned this Tuesday night on NXT. So they are going to crown new champions on television this week. They're not going to do some drawn-out tournament or something like that. Exactly how they're going to go about doing it, is Wes Lee going to be involved? We don't know yet. But we will have new champions crowned on Tuesday. And Carter's profile has since been removed from WWE.com in the superstar section. This whole story is a complete mess. So after MSK won back the tag team titles, Kimberly went on social media and posted a photo of herself with a swollen jaw. It looked like she had a cut on her cheek, as she claimed was caused by her husband. And she tagged WWE in the tweet, which said, "Hey," actually she tagged technically NXT, but "Hey NXT, this is my face after your tag champ Nash Carter got wasted and hit me so hard he split my lip open. He told me I'm a wrestler, so I'm always marked up. I've hid this for a year and even forgave him, but I can't hide it anymore. You all wanted proof? There it is. I'm sorry I backed out, but he was telling me lies all weekend to get me to not say anything." Then the next day, She posted another photo, this one, of Carter from many years ago when he was believed to be maybe around 19 years old, posing for a photo sporting a Hitler mustache doing the Nazi salute. And the belief is that he was fired not so much for the assault allegations, which have not yet been, you know, fully investigated or proven to be true, but because of the Nazi photo. Because the photo came out, and that was sort of their out to say, okay, we want to remove ourselves from this situation. Once that surfaced, you know, no matter how old the photo is, there was no way he was going to survive that. So they looked at that and said, well, now we have reason to get rid of this guy. That's what I'll bet happened here. I'll bet anything. The allegations made them uneasy, but they have held on to certain people before in spite of allegations that have been levied against them, but not uneasy enough to fire him until the photo came out. And once the photo came out, that gave them the cover that they needed to get rid of him because he wasn't worth the baggage. That's what happened here. If he was a bigger name, maybe he could have survived it. But once they saw that photo, that was it. That was the end of it. Cut bait and toss him overboard. That was it. Now, the other side to this story, and there's always another side, came not from Carter, because Carter has stayed silent throughout this entire ordeal. He has not said a word. He has not tweeted anything. He has not put any kind of a formal statement out, even since he's been fired. At least as of the time of this recording, he hasn't. So it hasn't come from him directly. It has come from his partner's wife, or now ex-partner's wife, Wes Lee, his now former tag team partner in MSK. Wes Lee's wife, Erica Marie, tweeted that Carter is innocent of everything that he has been accused of. She said Kimberly was actually served divorce papers on Monday, the very same day that she tweeted that photo of her face, claiming that she was just mad about that. And she decided to get back at him by doing what she did. Of course, she could be as mad as she wants to be. The fact that if we take her at face value here, and that's what happened, that doesn't change the possibility that, in fact, she was abused. So let's just make that very clear. No one's saying whether it's, you know, 100% definitive or not exactly, you know, what happened in that photo, but one doesn't necessarily mean that the other is false. So we'll just put that out there. But she said, just so everybody is aware, Nash Carter has been living with Wes and I for months, ever since she was in the hospital, which she checked herself into, she being Kimberly. He's actually been the one trying to avoid her and her mental abuse. They have not been together. He went to one therapy session. You know, the reason she even posted that photo in the first place, Kimberly, is because people were attacking her on social media. They were calling her a liar when she first went public with the allegations. So she posted the photo. And that only seemed to enrage people even more. That only seemed to make things even worse. So they're still technically married, but they've been apart now for a while, and Carter has been living with Wes and his wife, and he did in fact serve divorce papers on her this past week, I believe on Monday. And it has gotten really dirty, with Wes's wife going back and forth with Kimberly on Twitter, posting screenshots of things that she claims Kimberly lied about, text messages and DMs and things of that nature. And to be fair, you know, from what I saw, there was a lot of seemingly conflicting things that Kimberly was posting that didn't really seem to, you know, make a whole lot of sense. That does not mean that she's lying about what happened to her, but it creates a situation where I don't know what to believe or who's telling the truth. This whole thing is a fucking mess. Kimberly has since deactivated her Twitter. Right now, it's a she said, she said. It's not even a he said, she said. Because Carter's not doing any of the talking here. It's his friend's wife. So it's she said, which honestly, him staying silent for the time being might just be the best thing for him. To keep his mouth shut. Maybe he's doing that on the advice of counsel. I don't know. But keep your mouth shut. Wait for your turn to try to clear things up. Maybe it's in a court of law. That might not be such a bad thing. Because this whole thing as it currently exists, it's such a mess. All the back and forth. All the salacious stuff. It might just be good for him to be patient and then have his day. But he apparently has a lot of support from members of the NXT locker room, and clearly on social media, people started a Justice for Nash Carter hashtag which, I mean, good grief. Yeah, the state of social media today. Nobody knows the full truth, but he's got a lot of people behind him right now. One thing he does not have anymore is a job. And he has been dating Gigi Dolan of Toxic Attraction since he split from his wife, even though technically they're still married. I guess the two of them started dating not too long ago. And the day that he was fired, Dolan tweeted, "This world makes me sick." So she doesn't sound very happy about this. Meanwhile, Wes Lee, let's talk about Wes Lee. Poor Wes Lee, he gets fucked over because he just lost his tag team partner, and now he lost his tag team title. Through no fault of his own. It's like I've said before, I've talked about tag teams. When you're in a tag team, this is what you're always at risk for. You could stay healthy and not get hurt. You could walk the straight and narrow and be a model citizen and not get in trouble and not fail a test and not get arrested. But if something happens to your partner, you're fucked. And that's what happened to Wes Lee. I don't know if they're going to just pair him up with somebody else in a new team, or if they're going to use him as a single. He's very talented. I would hate to see his career get derailed because of all this drama. So hopefully he'll land on his feet and they'll find something for him to do. And it's not over yet. You know, Lee's wife tweeted, you know, he tagged Kimberly and said, "Kimberly got served divorce papers by Nash on Monday. He's been done with her. She's mad this is all happening. So she's turning to Twitter because she's outraged that he doesn't want to be with her anymore. It really is that simple. And let me not forget to mention that when she got served those papers, she was so upset that she ripped up all of Nash's posters, one-of-a-kind posters with other wrestlers' signatures. This is a case of an enraged, soon-to-be ex-wife who feels she is entitled to alimony. I will not give up, and I will continue to fight for my friend and his innocence for those saying to release the texts. I would much rather have him bring them to court for a slander and defamation case. This is only the beginning." If there's evidence to suggest that she's lying, then a court of law is the place to, you know, bring that up and litigate it. Not on social media. Bring the receipts and let the law handle things. You know, I don't know either of these people. I get the sense I don't want to know either of these people. But I don't know either of these people. There's been so much mudslinging back and forth and contradictory things I've seen that I have no opinion on one way or the other as far as how this should be handled. But I do know this. You should not be allowed to make shit up about somebody to try to ruin their life. And I know it happens and it sucks. And you should not be allowed to do that. You should not be allowed to get away with that. And look, if they have shit to show, I hope they show it in court. And if they can prove that she's lied about certain things, then hopefully, you know, that'll be dealt with. If you can prove that you've been wronged, then the man deserves his day in court. But I also know that if you're a man and you physically abuse a woman, if you lay your hands on another woman, your wife, whoever, it doesn't matter who it is, if that is what happened here, drunk or not, if you do that, you're a piece of slime. Those are the two things I do know. But as far as judging who's right and who's wrong, I have no idea, and neither do you. So for all the hashtag people out there, you know, I'm going to reserve any further judgment until we see how this all plays out. All the hashtag, yo, justice for Nash Carter, you're not going to see any hashtags out of me. That much I can tell you. Now, as I was getting ready to watch some SmackDown in some Rampage on Friday night and go live, I saw that Tony Khan's name was trending on Twitter. And so I went to go see if maybe he had made some kind of an announcement, because I know how much he loves making announcements. I said, maybe there's another Tony Khan announcement. What I saw was a series of tweets from him that at first I thought was a joke. I thought this could not possibly be real. But it was clear he was not joking. This is what he had to say on a random Friday afternoon. "An independent study has confirmed that much of the staunch anti-AEW online community aren't real individuals. It is a staff running thousands of accounts and an army of bots to signal boost them. Look closely, these aren't real people. Who would pay for such a wildly expensive thing? Research this one yourselves." You internet detectives thrive in these situations. Speaking of wild things, and then he went right into plugging the Jon Moxley Wheeler Yuta match on Rampage that night, before ending with, their boiler room staff is going to be working overtime on a Friday, and I love it. I like how he manages to tie it back to plugging Rampage. He did the same thing when he reacted, poorly reacted to Big Swole's comments. I think it was New Year's Eve. And by the end of his tweet, he turned it into a plug for Rampage that night. I don't think anybody is denying the fact that there are bots and fake accounts on Twitter. I mean, I could be a bot, for all you know. The Solobot. Solobot 5000. Very advanced technology. I sound just like the real thing. Except I run on Intel chips, because the AMD chips just gave me gas. But Tony Khan, right? The billionaire Tony Khan, who has, what does he have? 3 or 4 different jobs. He's got one job with a football team. He's got one job with a soccer team. He's got 2 wrestling promotions now that he is running. Spent money to commission a research study to see if a staff of a select few are the ones responsible for running thousands of fake accounts on Twitter, which are then boosted by and shared by an army of bots. Bots that are being used to boost accounts that are saying mean things about Tony Khan and AEW. I don't think you need a scientific study to know that this is going on. I'm sure it happens all across social media, not just with AEW. There's a lot of disinformation out there that does get boosted by bots. This is nothing new. But the fact that he would even see fit to commission a study to look into this. I mean, look, it's his money. He can do what he... And he's got a lot of it, and he can do whatever he wants with it, but without any actual study to read or link to, because apparently it's not finished yet. You know, without any actual study to point to support what he's saying, his tweet came off very poorly. As you might imagine. And he was mocked all across social media for it. I saw even Becky Lynch got in on the fun. She was mocking Tony Khan. There are a lot of sick individuals on social media who are obsessed with AEW. Absolutely obsessed. And they spend almost every waking hour of every day tweeting negative stuff about them. These people have no lives outside of harassing other people over something they happen to like. It's actually very sad. I feel sorry for these people. But a lot of those people, sadly, really do exist. Many of them, they're flesh and blood human beings. And then there are relatively normal people. Unfortunately, they seem to be in the minority. But there are relatively normal people who do have valid criticisms of AEW. Or they simply don't like AEW and they choose to be vocal about it. But they don't go around mocking and harassing other people about it. Those people are entitled to their opinions. Not everybody is going to like what AEW is offering, and that's okay. But the implication here is that I presume, without him actually saying WWE, the implication is that WWE is funding this operation to try to generate negative phony comments about AEW. That's what he's implying when he says, oh, who would pay for such a wildly expensive thing? Look, I put nothing past WWE. Let us not forget Pizzagate. Have we forgotten? Let us not forget Pizzagate. With Chris Jericho and Nick Gage on Dynamite and them shopping the story around to different media outlets, trying to get them in trouble. WWE has been playing dirty for decades. Their hands are hardly clean. They'll get down to the pig pen. They won't think anything of it. They're used to it. They're used to the stench. But the need for him to stir up the hornet's nest like he did on Friday, it just came off like he is obsessed, you know, as obsessed as these very real people are with shitting on AEW every week. He comes across like he's just obsessed with all the criticism, like he can't handle the criticism. That he would commission a study to somehow prove that the majority of accounts critiquing AEW must be fake and therefore they have no merit. It's like he's dismissing that there could be real people online, more than a few, who are legitimately criticizing his company. You know, Nick Houseman of Wrestling Inc., he reached out to Tony Khan to clarify all of this, and Tony Khan added some more. He had more to say. He said, waiting for final study, but here's what my expert confirmed. Here's what his expert confirmed. It's people with real live accounts making posts and then using their bots to manipulate the social channel algorithm by backing them up with engagement from a made-up Twitter identity. Social media teams will often fight on this. Bots are great for numbers, and when they're gone, you'll see a dip in digital conversation impressions. Both those were either negative sentiment or not real anyway. For example, I tweet Mega only eats rotten bananas. Mega is the chief legal counsel, I believe is her title for AEW. She works for the Jaguars too. I throw, say, 18 bots behind it, which takes about 5 minutes to do. Twitter security can't differentiate when done well, and neither can most social teams. The problem becomes every time people type Mega into the search bar because of a real account supported by bots, the first suggested result would be tweets about Mega eating rotten bananas. I'm oversimplifying, but that's the 5-cent version of what's happening. Oversimplifying? I don't know about that. It's a conspiracy, everybody. It is a con. I'm dubbing it the conspiracy. Why does this make me think of Pepe Silvia? That's what this makes me think of. The Pepe Silvia scene from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. I don't even watch the show all the time, but even I know about the Pepe Silvia scene. I'm sure you've seen the memes over the years. That's what this makes me think of from It's Always Sunny. I just picture Tony Khan with all the papers on the wall, looking like he hasn't slept in 5 days. I'm very happy that AEW exists. You know, it has made wrestling a lot more fun to follow. Competition is a great thing. A lot of times, it's a nice palate cleanser from the shit that I'm spoon-fed by WWE. And the crossover with talent from different promotions that you don't get to see in WWE. It's great. I love it. But this is nuttier than a Snickers bar. Him coming out with this and not at least having some actual data yet to back this up for us to read, it just sounds like, you know, he might have that once his expert gives it to him, but all this did was stir people up into a feeding frenzy. And I don't know, maybe that was the point. Maybe that's what he wanted to do. Maybe he got what he wanted. You know, I see the messages saying, can you imagine if Vince McMahon did the same thing? If he did something like this, my God, he would be tarred and feathered by everybody online. They'd be calling for him to be locked away in a mental institution. He would never go online and tweet out nonsense like this. He's above that. First of all, Vince McMahon is not above being petty. So let's put that shit to bed once and for all. No, he is not. He is not above being petty. I don't care how old he is. But the reason you'll never see Vince McMahon go on Twitter or Facebook or Instagram or TikTok and post some bullshit like this is because Vince McMahon is 76 years old. He's 76, and he probably thinks Twitter is stupid. The only reason he has an account is because his social media people told him he needed to set one up. Tony Khan was only born a few days after me. He's not even 40 years old yet. He's young enough to be part of the social media generation. You know, he probably snoops around on social media more than you may think, so I'm not surprised that he's more active on there than Vince McMahon would be. Of course he is. The guy's in his 30s. Where else would he be? Where are all 20 and 30 year olds? Social media. So why would Tony Khan be any different? Just because he's richer than most people? That doesn't surprise me. Him being online, I don't necessarily see anything bad about that, except some of these tweets, you know, occasionally that he'll put out. I do think sometimes he needs to be reined in with some of this stuff. If Vince McMahon was in his 30s, he'd be on social media a lot more often too. But yes, I do think that sometimes Tony needs to be reined in for his own good. I mean, he's going to do what he wants. It's his account. He's the boss. He can do what he wants. But for his own good, I do think that wouldn't be such a bad idea. But boy, the tribalists, they were out in full force after he posted those tweets. If you dared to read the comments beneath it, I mean, it was like a disease. The tribalism it set off in the comments, my God. Tony Khan was the real tribal. Forget Roman Reigns. Tony Khan this week was the real tribal chief. To my point about AEW working with other promotions, this was cool to read about this week. AEW Dynamite and Rampage are going to be streaming soon on New Japan World for Japanese subscribers. This is a regional deal for the Japanese market only. There's also a version planned soon where the shows will air live. That's very cool. And anything that further cements the relationship and the working partnership between the two companies is a great sign. And it comes just in time for the Owen Hart Cup. It'd be nice to get some New Japan involvement in the tournament. But either one, the men's or the women's. I guess, with New Japan, it wouldn't be so much the women's. But I could see that causing problems, I guess, if they brought in a couple of New Japan people only for them to lose. Now, somebody like Suzuki comes in. I don't even think he's really under contract to New Japan. Suzuki's sort of a freelancer who just does his own thing. So I could see that being an issue. But anyway, it is always nice to hear about more collaboration between the two companies. And hopefully, in the months ahead, that will manifest itself either with some AEW guys going over to Japan, got the G1 coming up, or maybe we get a couple of big names that come in to work a match or a program on AEW television. FTR just had the best week of their careers with back-to-back classic matches in the span of 5 days. First with the Briscoes at the Supercard of Honor last week, where they won the Ring of Honor tag team titles, and then retaining those titles and their AAA tag team titles, winner take all, over the Young Bucks on Dynamite Wednesday night. Back-to-back match of the year contenders. And I loved the added touch of having Bobby Cruz out there on Wednesday to do the ring introductions, because technically it was a Ring of Honor title match, and I've heard him do so many introductions to Ring of Honor main events over the years. I'm glad he was able to have that moment, and I love that main event. That main event was fantastic. I did not share the same love for the tables match with the Hardy Boys against the Butcher and the Blade. That match was a mess. Jeff did not look great. He did not look his best out there, and his brother tweeted something the other day that might explain why. Matt Hardy tweeted that Wednesday was the one-year anniversary of their father's death. And he specifically said that it weighed heavily on his brother's mind, so it is entirely possible that that played a role in how off Jeff seemed to me during that match on Wednesday. So chalk it up to a bad night. I was not a fan of that match, but hopefully it was a one-time only thing. We also had the AEW debut of Samoa Joe, who squashed Max Caster and qualified for the Owen Hart Cup. It's great to see Joe back in the ring. He's going to be feuding with Jay Lethal based on the post-match. They're teasing another angle with them. He's going to have some kind of a gift or a present, he and Sanjay Dutt will, to present to Joe on Wednesday. But more importantly than whatever this gift is that Jay Lethal is bringing on Wednesday for Samoa Joe, just signed for this Wednesday, Joe goes one-on-one with Murder Grandpa. Minoru Suzuki, coming back to Dynamite, only this time he's coming back as the Ring of Honor television champion. He just won the TV title at Supercard of Honor from Rhett Titus. He's defending that title against Joe this week. That is going to be a lot of fun to watch. I'm very much looking forward to that. Also on Wednesday night, Red Dragon will challenge Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus for the AEW tag team titles. That smells like a title change to me, especially with Adam Cole challenging Hangman Page on a live Rampage Friday night for the AEW World title, airing, by the way, before SmackDown, not after. So Rampage has a different start time this week, 7 Eastern, due to the NBA playoffs, so just be aware of that. The two are going to meet, though, that night in a Texas Deathmatch for the championship. Feels too soon for them to be doing another Texas Deathmatch after we just saw one with Hangman and Lance Archer, I think, barely 2 months ago. Plus, we just had a very bloody main event on Friday between Jon Moxley and Wheeler Yuta. So it looks like we're probably getting another bloodbath this Friday. I don't see that as a title change, but I do think Fish and O'Reilly are going to take the tag team gold. Speaking of Moxley and Yuta, their main event from Rampage on Friday was excellent. Yuta was bleeding all over the place. He took a beating, but he kept coming back. This is one of those instances where the blood really did add a lot to the match. I still think they do way too much of it. And when you do way too much of it, it just doesn't have the same effect. But he lost to Jon Moxley. He earned the respect, though, of Moxley and Danielson and Regal and the audience. The way the audience was chanting his name and reacting to him, and they did that on Rampage, when usually the crowds are more subdued because it's so late in the night. You would think that this was the biggest main event these people had seen in a long time, the way they were reacting to this. They reacted to this like it was a big-time thing. And when the match was over, William Regal got inside with Danielson, and it looked like Regal might attack this kid, but he put his hand out to shake his hand. And Wheeler shook it. Moxley told him, now the real work begins. So we'll see if he is an official member now of this Blackpool Combat Club. They didn't say for sure officially if he is or not. It looked that way, the way they went off the air. But that match is a textbook example of how to create a new star. Yuta was already on his way up. We were already seeing him get more and more television time, but that match put him over in a major way. And it was a great example of how by... Yeah, I said this on the stream, actually, on Friday night. I said, this is a great example of winning by losing. This right here is a textbook example of how sometimes losing a match is better than winning. Losing the match, he got over every bit as much, if not more, in defeat than anything else. But they had those people chanting this kid's name when that match was over. And now the question is, how do they move forward and capitalize on this? Is he going to be part of the group? I hope he is. There was another segment from Rampage that was not as excellent as this main event, and that involves Sammy Guevara and Ty Conti coming out to confront Dan Lambert, Scorpio Sky, Ethan Page. They had a back and forth promo, and Sammy was cussing them, and they were going back and forth. It's the usual stuff that you would expect. But in the building, they got booed. They got booed a couple of times because they had come out to do one of the flashcard gimmicks that Sammy does before they go to the picture-in-picture, and he was out there with Ty, because now they're like attached at the hip, not just in his vlogs, but on TV as well, and I think that's going to blow up in their face. It's already blowing up in their face, putting the two of them together, because they don't come across like a couple of baby faces that the people should cheer. They come across as being completely obnoxious, fucking brats, who frankly are getting the kind of reaction that you would expect, and if that's what they're going for, then turn them heel. But I don't believe that's what they're planning to do. I don't think the idea is to turn either one of them heel. In the end, they may have to. But, you know, they come out there, they get booed. This is not going well here. Putting the two of them together on TV has not been a good idea. Now, Rampage is live on Friday, airing earlier, as I said. And then AEW is airing its second Battle of the Belt special, Saturday night at 8 Eastern on TNT, which is being taped the night before. Only one match is announced so far. Thunder Rosa defending the AEW Women's title against Nyla Rose. Obviously, they're going to have to announce at least two more title matches this week. Could be a TNT title match. It could be Sammy challenging Scorpio Sky. In fact, I would be surprised if that wasn't announced for the Battle of the Belt show. They're already doing the Texas Deathmatch with Cole and Hangman on Friday, so we're not going to see that on Saturday. You always have the FTW title. There's the TBS title, Jade Cargill. They're teasing a match with her and Marina Shafir. Do you do two women's title matches the same night? They may have to. So we'll find out what the other matches are this week. I'll have thoughts on both shows next Sunday, on episode 752. Since I can't go live on Friday, we'll talk about it on the podcast next week. And you know, while Tony Khan reads through the findings of his bot study, probably thinking to himself, you know, it's not fair. It's not fair. It's not fair that all these bots and fake accounts are coming after me and my company. You know what's really not fair? The fact that Netflix hides thousands of shows and movies from you based simply on where you live. And then they have the nerve to raise their rates on you. Believe it or not, they've just raised their prices once again. Now, you could just cancel your subscription in protest. You could always do that. Or you could be smart and make sure that you're getting your full money's worth by using ExpressVPN like I do. You might not know that what's on Netflix in your country is completely different from what somebody in the UK or in Japan or in Germany has on theirs. You know, using ExpressVPN, I can control which country I want Netflix to think I'm in. ExpressVPN has over 90 countries to choose from, so every time I run out of stuff to watch, I just switch to another country to unlock some new stuff. It's great. You know, recently I've been checking out Rick and Morty. It's not on US Netflix, but you tap one button, ExpressVPN lets me change my location to France to watch it. Oui, it's true. Just picture French Solomonster sitting on his couch eating a baguette, watching cartoons with the Eiffel Tower behind me. And here's the best part. It's not just for Netflix. You can use ExpressVPN to unlock shows on other streaming services too, like BBC iPlayer, which is free and only available in the UK. I'm sure that's something that's popular with some of you. We have a lot of UK listeners. ExpressVPN's also lightning fast. It works on your phone, your laptop, smart TVs, so you can watch your shows on the big screen with zero buffering. I don't think I've ever had a buffering issue. So stop paying full price for streaming services and only getting access to a fraction of their content. Get your money's worth at expressvpn.com/solomonster. Don't forget to use my link so you can get 3 extra months of ExpressVPN absolutely free. That's expressvpn.com/solomonster. expressvpn.com/solomonster. Go ahead and do that now. Don't make me send the bots after you. Raw Monday Night had Cody Rhodes in the middle of the ring giving us his mission statement for why he is back in WWE. This was the post-WrestleMania edition of Raw Monday Night, and boy, these post-WrestleMania Raws and post-WrestleMania SmackDowns, they ain't what they used to be. They are not nearly as fun and as exciting and crazy as they used to be, but Cody, I thought, was actually the best part of Raw on Monday night, which isn't saying all that much, but he did talk about the fact that it's been 47 days since he's been a free agent, and people have been wondering how hard was it for him to make the decision to come back to WWE, and he said, actually, it really wasn't very hard at all, which is what he's been saying in a lot of the media interviews that he's been doing. And the whole point of this was the photo that he put up on the Titantron. Photo of Dusty Rhodes standing on the turnbuckles from Madison Square Garden in 1977, holding up the old WWWF title belt. And he had challenged for the championship. I think it might have been against Billy Graham that night. And he won by countout, but he did not win the championship. And he talked about how that photo was on his father's mantle until his final day on this earth. And, you know, a young 8-year-old Cody, it had to be explained to him that, you know, you can't win the championship on a countout. And anyway, he decided that day that he was going to become a wrestler. He was going to follow in his father's footsteps. He knew right then and there what he needed to do. He was going to win the championship belt that his father did not. And when he did, he was going to hand the title over to the American Dream and tell him that nobody can take this away from you now, like they did on that night back in 1977. And unfortunately, that dream died because Dusty isn't here anymore. But that doesn't mean that he can't still wrap that title around the waist of the American Nightmare. So he made his intentions very clear. I thought this was a very effective promo. He's playing off real life. He's making it clear. I now am motivated by that photograph. I am motivated by not only wanting to win the championship for myself, but I want to win it for my father, who never made it long enough to watch his son become the WWE champion. That is a story, a babyface story, that people can get behind. And in one night, really 2 nights, if you count his match with Rollins at WrestleMania, which is one of the best matches this year, either night of WrestleMania, with Seth Rollins against Cody Rhodes, that coupled with the promo on Raw Monday night, he made a statement. And coming out of it, the only thought that I had is, Cody, when you look, especially when you look at the roster right now, you know, I know Drew McIntyre is there, and it may well end up being Drew. I am not unaware of the fact that they have this big UK stadium show coming up later this year. Maybe they're going to save that moment for then. Maybe Drew McIntyre is going to be the one to unseat the Tribal Chief and win the championship. But I think Cody Rhodes is the guy. I think Cody Rhodes is the guy who should go on to defeat Roman Reigns and become WWE champion. Or WWE Universal, whatever he's called at the time, because I don't think this title unification is going to last even a year necessarily. But I think Cody Rhodes should absolutely be that guy. And the story makes sense. You know, it's a great story to tell. That image that we saw on Monday night from that promo itself is going to be part of a video package that they show the night that he steps into the ring with Roman Reigns, whether it's SummerSlam, whether it's WrestleMania, whatever it might be. What we saw Monday night, you'll see, it'll say 6 months ago, or it'll say 1 year ago. There's Cody. Remember when he stood in the ring and he pointed to the Tron and he showed us the photo of Dusty and he vowed that he would win the championship his father never did? I can see it now. It's got to be what they're planning for. And if it isn't, then they should be. Because there aren't too many options better, frankly, right now than Cody Rhodes to be the one to take that title from Roman Reigns. Even if they're hoping and planning, let's be honest, they're hoping. They're on bended knee hoping that The Rock will agree to come in for WrestleMania next year to wrestle Roman Reigns. Even if he does, which seems very much uncertain at this point, it doesn't have to be for the championship. I mean, do we really want to go another 12 months with Roman Reigns remaining unbeaten and undefeated before we finally get to a point where he might drop the championship? I don't know. I'm surprised they've made it this long. Back-to-back years at WrestleMania in the main event, the heel has gone over and retained his title. It's virtually unheard of. When was the last time that even happened? That the same man, a heel, as the champion, goes into WrestleMania 1 year, beats his opponents, is still champion a year later, uninterrupted, and he wins again. And they go off the air with the heel celebrating. I mean, that just doesn't happen these days when it comes to WrestleMania. So Roman is on this very unusual streak when it comes to the main roster. I mean, we've seen other champions, NXT UK, Walter, he had like a 600 or 700 or 800 day run, I think, as the NXT UK champion. But I'm talking main roster. I mean, we haven't seen a run like this. It's like they say, since Bruno and Backlund and Hogan. And that was a different time where you can have a champion who would hold the title for 4, 5, 6 years straight. I mean, those days are long over. But if you're going to have Roman continue to hold that title, you need people to challenge him, believably challenge him for it. And that's something they're very much lacking in right now. That's why I say I don't know if they can hold off that long. In a perfect world, this would be a story that pays off in the main event of WrestleMania. But they might be better off doing it at a show like SummerSlam. But speaking of Seth Rollins, who did come out at the end of that segment to shake hands with Cody Rhodes, and it's a Trojan horse. I mean, obviously these two are going to be wrestling again. I think that's pretty obvious. And probably a WrestleMania Backlash. They'll have another match. But Rollins was a guest on the Sports Illustrated Media podcast this week. And he had this to say on the subject of Monday Night Raw being a 3-hour show. And I thought it was worth mentioning here because you've heard me rant about 3 hours of Raw now for the last fucking 10 years. He said, I think a 3-hour show is just obnoxiously long. Every single week. Everything gets stretched out, and you've got to cram. You've got to fill 3 hours of TV. There's just nothing to be done. You know, that's just how it is. So I think 2 hours is a beautiful kind of number for a pro wrestling show, and I think it's easier to make everything mean a little bit more. You know, on SmackDown, when I was there last year, I hardly ever wrestle on television, and so it was kind of a big deal. You look at Roman. He hardly ever wrestles on television, I think maybe a handful of times in the last year. So when he has matches at these pay-per-views, they feel like big deals. And on Raw, I've wrestled in like 26 five-star matches in the last 2 months. It's just been wild, the amount of actual wrestling that I have to do. And I would love to avoid that, but it is what it is. I like the fact that I get a lot more screen time on Mondays because you have the extra hour, but yes, it is apples to oranges type of thing. I do think 3 hours is just a lot to ask every week of a viewer. I did laugh at that. I know what he's trying to say. I did laugh at that part where he, he's a wrestler complaining about, I can't believe all this wrestling I've had to do. Oh my God. Asking a wrestler to wrestle. My heavens. How could you do such a thing? But he's not wrong. You know, in the past, I've criticized Seth Rollins for saying some stupid shit, but when he makes sense, I gotta mention that too. And everything he said, basically everything he said in that statement is 100% accurate. And that's what I've said before. They know it. Even Vince McMahon has to know it, but it's a USA Network thing. They worked it out. They agreed to it. USA wanted it. That's how it's been for 10 years now. We're in 2022. For those who don't realize this, Raw went to 3 hours on a regular weekly permanent basis in July of 2012 with Raw 1000. Up until that point, they had the occasional three-hour specials. They would do a King of the Ring or something like that, but they were few and far between. It was July of 2012 when Raw became 3 hours on a regular permanent basis. We are now 10 years into this, and it really is amazing to see how the audience has eroded in that time. I mean, you would expect there to probably be some period of erosion just because the nature of things changing and everything, and the product just isn't as hot as it used to be. But man, you look at it graphically on a chart, you see year-over-year losses for Raw, as far as the Raw numbers every week. I mean, it's pretty staggering, and I credit a lot of that, frankly, to the show just being too damn long. And Seth Rollins, I'm sure, speaks for a lot of the talent that are on that show. But he's absolutely right. We had the new women's tag team champions on that show Monday. Sasha Banks and Naomi, they won the belts at WrestleMania. And they went in there against Rhea Ripley and Liv Morgan. It was a non-title match. And Rhea and Liv, they lost. They didn't really have a lot of luck here. And you could tell Rhea Ripley, the way she carried herself, her mannerisms, her facial expression, she was disappointed. And she went to Adam Pearce and Sonya Deville, and she requested that her and Liv get a tag team title match against Sasha and Naomi on Raw this Monday night. I don't know how they swung that, because there are a couple of losers. Apparently, you could just walk in there and go, well, we lost at WrestleMania, and we lost on Raw 2 days later, or I guess the next day. So back-to-back days, back-to-back losses. So why don't you give us a tag team title match? Okay, sure. I've heard people on these shows and these segments that actually deserve to get a title match, and they have to jump through hoops in order to get one from one of these I was going to call them GMs, but I don't know what the hell you would call that. I guess they're WWE officials. So it's comical to me that just like that, I don't know what Rhea may have promised them, what she may have promised Sonya. I don't know what's going on. They're always posting photos together on social media and leather and all that. Who knows what promises were made here? But they're getting a tag team title match on Raw Monday night. And so my expectation and my hope is that they will lose again. And that will lead to the split between Rhea Ripley and Liv Morgan because, as I pitched during my WrestleMania stream before it started being reported all over the place, Rhea Ripley, what a fine addition she would make to this new heel group that Edge is putting together. We know Damian Priest is now aligned with Edge. They had a promo segment on Monday. But you got to add more members than that. Why not add a female member, and why not make that female member Rhea Ripley? She would fit that group like a glove, and I think a heel turn right now for her would be the best thing. So that's how I see this playing out. I think they're going to fail again. That's the end of the team. And then she ends up being recruited, or however it works, but she ends up aligning with Edge and Damian Priest. Miz got a quick 30-second win over Dominic Mysterio. The bigger story is what happened when it was over. Veer has come. He has veered right into Monday Night Raw. He's been driving for a long time, many months. The GPS took him the wrong way. It took him this way. It took him that way. It took him into a wall. Finally, he made it to Raw. He veered into the building. He came out. He didn't look any different. I mean, I don't know what people were talking about with there's been a change in the character. I mean, he looked and acted exactly the same as he was doing in those vignettes for all these months. You know, he had the fucking paint on his forehead, and, you know, they treated him like a monster. I thought, you know, you look at some of the stuff on social media. I thought maybe they were going to debut him as a babyface. He probably could have been a massively over babyface if they wanted him to be a babyface. But he debuted as a heel. He dropped Ray with a side slam. He put Dominic in a modified camel clutch, and he wouldn't let go. So Veer is finally here. And as I said on Monday, I believe that this man, within the next few months, he'll be chasing after the 24/7 title. It's just a matter of time. I mentioned Lord Tenzai. Even when they debuted Lord Tenzai on the Raw after Mania in 2012, and they were going to give him a big monster push, he even got a win on TV over John Cena before they got bored with him, and that was the end of Lord Tenzai, and they gave up on him. The same will happen to Veer. But for now, they'll give him the monster push. We'll see how long it lasts. Bron Breakker was on Raw Monday night, and he won back the NXT Championship from Dolph Ziggler. And this, I can understand that they wanted to save the title win, I guess, for Raw on Monday in front of a bigger audience than NXT would have had on Peacock for Stand and Deliver on a day where absolutely nobody was talking about NXT, other than me. Schmucks like me went on YouTube to talk about a show that people were overlooking because all anybody was talking about was WrestleMania, Stone Cold, Cody Rhodes. Hopefully this experiment is a one-year experiment. We don't need to have an NXT matinee on the same day. Do it a different day. I think you're doing a disservice to NXT as well, because nobody gives a shit. You're going to do it on the same day a few hours before WrestleMania. Nobody cares. And they obviously felt the same way, evidently, because they wanted to hold off on his title win for Raw on Monday night in front of a bigger audience. And unfortunately, the people didn't really give a shit. They reacted to the finish, which is good, and they gave Breaker a nice little ovation when he won the title back at the end. But for the majority of the match, the people sat on their hands. This didn't feel like a big deal, because this was not an NXT crowd. Nobody cared, so it didn't come off well. But I do like that they're keeping Breaker in NXT for a little while longer. I was worried they were going to rush him up to the main roster, and I think he would benefit by staying in NXT for a little while longer, so that's good. MVP, who was not with Bobby Lashley at WrestleMania when he beat Omos, was back on Raw Monday night when he introduced Lashley. I mean, you talk about a tell. He said, well, let me introduce to you a man who, yeah, he didn't even need me at WrestleMania. That right there was a giveaway for what was about to happen. And Lashley came out, he cut a promo on Omos. Omos came out. MVP ends up turning on Bobby Lashley. He attacks him from behind with his cane. MVP is now with Omos. So this feud continues. Lashley is still the babyface, but now Omos has MVP in his corner. This is the idea that I talked about before the Day 1 pay-per-view at the beginning of the year. I thought this might be where we were headed. MVP was going to align with Omos. Lashley was going to go babyface. It played out pretty much the same way. They got there a little bit differently. But if they're not giving up on the Omos experiment, they're going to continue to push him and put him on TV, then this was the best thing that could possibly happen, because this man should not be standing in the ring with a microphone in his hand. He should have somebody there to do the talking for him. That's where MVP, I think, could be best utilized. Lashley, I enjoyed them being together. Does Lashley need MVP? He doesn't need him. He doesn't need him the way that Omos does. So, yes, he needed somebody with him. MVP was the obvious choice. I think that's the right move to make. I don't think MVP can do much to change how terrible he is in the ring. But it doesn't hurt the act. All it does is potentially help him. So it's a move that makes sense. And then on Raw Monday, right, big post-WrestleMania show, their big ending to the show was to send Roman Reigns and the Bloodline out to cut a promo and tell people that, watch SmackDown on Friday and I'll have more information. I'll have more news on what's next for the Bloodline. That's how they went off the air. A lame ending to the Raw after WrestleMania on Monday night. And unfortunately, it was much of the same with SmackDown on Friday. Tomorrow night on Raw, Cody Rhodes has his first match on Raw in 6 years against The Miz. AJ Styles takes on Damian Priest. Rhea Ripley and Liv Morgan challenge Sasha and Naomi for the women's tag team titles. MVP is going to have Omos in the VIP lounge. And Veer is going to take on Rey Mysterio. They also announced on Raw Talk that Jerry the King Lawler is going to be filling in for Corey Graves on commentary for the next couple of weeks while Graves and Carmella are away on their honeymoon. They just got married this past week. I saw there were two weddings. Carmella and Corey Graves got married, and I saw that Alexa Bliss got married to her boyfriend, Ryan Cabrera. And I saw a horrifying photo of Alexa and her new beau posing with Raquel Rodriguez. They changed her name. Raquel Rodriguez from NXT, who I mentioned is with Braun Strowman. And there's Braun. You've got to see Braun in this photo. I don't know what the fuck he's wearing. He's wearing pink Crocs to this wedding. That was a very frightening... I think allowing Braun to control his own narrative might have been a bad idea. I think he might need somebody else to control his narrative if that's the way he's going to dress to someone's wedding. SmackDown on Friday night. Roman Reigns, there's a big story coming out of SmackDown, where almost nothing happened. If you watch SmackDown for any wrestling, you were pretty much shit out of luck, except for one match. Roman Reigns wants the Usos to go to Raw to unify the tag team titles. We've already unified the two top titles, and now Roman wants his cousins to go and take the tag belts as well. And I am in favor of this idea. I've been in favor of having floating champions that go from brand to brand, because WWE's tag team division on each show is simply not strong enough on its own. It's very dull, and we get a lot of rematches over and over again. Having one set of champions that are allowed to go back and forth, I think, is a minor improvement from the current situation. They still have to add tag teams. I mean, just because you unify the belts doesn't mean that, oh, everything is great now with the tag team division. No, the tag team division still needs more teams. But having one set of champions is something that I've been in favor of now for a while. Doesn't mean they're going to do it. They're teasing it. I think the fact that they already did it with Roman, I think they're definitely going to do it with the tag belts, but maybe not. Maybe they, you know, wrestle RK-Bro and they lose. RK-Bro is still very over. Maybe they don't want to take the belts away from them again. But it looks very likely we're going to get a unification on that end as well. Now, during that segment, Shinsuke Nakamura came out to confront Roman and the Bloodline. They never said a word about whether or not he is going to be challenging for the championship. He never said a word because Roman immediately took the mic away from him. He said, look, I have sympathy for this guy. He just lost his tag team partner, Rick Boogs, who just underwent surgery this past week for a torn quad and a torn patella tendon. He's going to be out of action for a while. Shin, as they call him, Shin, is without a tag team partner, and he gave him a big hug. And the Usos then gave him a double super kick, and they left Shinsuke laying on the floor like a fucking jabron as he looked up. It's funny because you could see on camera he's laying on the floor there for like 30 seconds or a minute. And as the Bloodline is posing, as they're going off the air, he just kind of looks up and gazes at them. He doesn't jump them or anything like that. So the way it all came across here, he did not come out of this looking like a credible challenger to Roman Reigns. And even if he was left standing at the end of the segment, and I hate to say it because I wouldn't have said this 5 years ago when he debuted, six years ago. But Shinsuke Nakamura is not a credible challenger for Roman Reigns. There aren't very many of them. But he may be somebody they have to rely upon to get a title match in their next pay-per-view main event because they don't have anybody else. Unless they go back to Brock. Brock is supposed to be on that show. It is possible they do Brock and Roman again at Backlash. And this is just a little red herring that they threw out there on the show on Friday. It's got to be either Brock or Shinsuke based on what they did on TV. After that, it's slim pickings. Baron Corbin, Madcap Moss, or I should say Happy Corbin, Madcap Moss are no more. Thank you, God. This has been a while in the making. Moss turned on him. They had a brawl. People were cheering for Madcap. Madcap, you know, well, not under that name. Moss. Moss has potential. He definitely has potential. And they use this role to establish him? Great. Great. But since they're busy changing everybody's name, which I'm about to get to, why don't you change his name? They change all these people's names who don't need their names to be changed. But then you have a terrible name like Madcap Moss. Why don't you change his name? And ditch the suspenders while you're at it. And then this guy might have a fighting chance of being a real over babyface on that show. But I mentioned the name changes. This show felt a little bit more like a Raw after WrestleMania just by virtue of having some new faces that made their debut. We had some NXT call-ups on this show. And one of those call-ups is, in fact, Walter. Or Gunther, as they are now calling him. Walter was on SmackDown Friday night, and he won his first match, too. It was a good old-fashioned squash match, and he looked good. He looked fine in that match. They called him up with Marcel Bartel, one half of the Imperium tag team, one third of the group, but no Fabian Aichner. Conspicuous by his absence was Fabian Aichner. I am mystified as to why that would be, unless they just have plans for him to be a single star on the NXT roster, but they have left him behind. They called up two of the three members of Imperium. the only, you know, I try to rack my brain to think, okay, what would be the logic involved here? Maybe they think, well, he's not German or Austrian or anything like that. He's Italian. And he is. Eichner is real Italian. He was actually born in Italy, unlike Mr. D'Angelo over there. But I don't know what their thought process is here. You know, Eichner is the one, and anybody who has listened to me talk about NXT and whenever they're in the ring, you've heard me say this before. Eichner is the one who I've always expressed, I've been impressed by. When I do my match reviews for Imperium, he's the one who always impresses me, and I always put him over. And yet he's the one they didn't call up. So my only hope and thought is that, okay, they recognize, okay, this guy's pretty good, but he doesn't need to be part of this group. We're going to push him as a single star in NXT. I hope for his sake that they have decent plans for him. Otherwise, why else split up Imperium? I wouldn't have split them up regardless. You can bring them up as Imperium and get mileage out of them as a trio, and you can always split them off later on. Do the split on the main roster and then push them as a single star on SmackDown. You could always do that. Why would you split them up now before they even make it to the main roster? You have now eliminated a perfectly good trio. The Bloodline against Imperium, that could have been something in a few months' time. It's a feud that could have been great, and it still could be. It still could be if they call Eichner up later on to join them, which they absolutely could. They could still course correct on this and have him join them later on. 1 week he runs out there, attacks one of their opponents. Who's that hooded figure? And he pulls the hood down. Oh, it's Fabian Eichner. It's the other member of Imperium. And finally they're reunited. Do the right thing. Keep Imperium together. You can always split them apart later on and give them a singles push if that's what you want to do. But as far as Walter now being on the main roster, what does his future hold? You know, obviously I have my doubts about what his future holds. I am very concerned. As a fan of his work, I am very concerned. But this should be a no-brainer. It's like Cody Rhodes on Raw. This should be a no-brainer. They need stars. They need to push new stars. Cody Rhodes is a great new star they can get behind and push, and maybe he's the one to take the title from Roman Reigns eventually. Walter, talented guy, could be a great villain on that SmackDown brand, and one day could be a champion there on that brand. I look forward to the eventual battles with Walter and Sheamus. I look forward to the eventual battles with Walter and Drew McIntyre. He's got opponents to work with on that brand. I hope they recognize what they have in him. You would think that they do, given that they called him up, but you never know. You never know with these people. They might see him as having value in a very different way, a way that's very different than the way you and I see value in him. That's what worries me. Lacey Evans. When I saw that Lacey Evans was on her way back, because there have been rumors now for a while, that Lacey Evans, who had a kid many months ago, was ready to come back. And then she was spotted in town, and it looked pretty obvious she was probably going to be on SmackDown. And what we ended up getting was a pre-taped promo, a vignette of her just standing there talking to us, talking to the audience and telling us her life story. She dropped the sassy Southern Belle gimmick, which was very much dated and played out. And she was talking about being born in a small town with a father who struggled with mental health and alcohol and drug addiction. And one night or one day, you know, her mother just put everything they owned in black bags and took her, and they, you know, took her from school, and they left. They fled. They escaped without the father even knowing. And they bounced around from state to state, and they lived in shelters, and it really kind of shaped who she is and her resolve, her never-give-up attitude, and eventually she joined the U.S. Marines. By the end, she was getting cheers from the live crowd in the building. And she came away from this segment looking and sounding great and looking and sounding genuine. Like, now we know the real Lacey Evans on TV for the first time. I mean, I've heard interviews with her. She's told her story, and I knew she was a former Marine. But I was, you know, seeing comments under the WWE tweet that they put out when this was over, like, oh my God, I didn't know she was a Marine. Like, there are people who don't know. They just don't know this woman's real life story. They see her playing this old fucking Liberty Bell knockoff character on TV and then being part of dumb storylines with, you know, the fucking Ric Flair and Charlotte over there. They don't know who this woman really is. Sometimes someone's own story, life story, is compelling enough that you can allow them to go out there and be themselves and be real. Some people are fucking boring and they need a gimmick. If I sat down in WWE's offices and they said, all right, tell us a little bit about yourself. Who's the real Solo Monster? I'd be like, I don't know. You know, I like baseball. I like this. I like that. They would look at me and go, well, we have nothing to work with here. We have to gimmick you up. And then forget about it. I mean, God only knows what gimmick I would end up with. Some people just, you know, their own life stories or background or interests outside of wrestling just isn't compelling enough. This woman has a compelling story, and I don't know why you wouldn't want to tell that story on TV, why it took them this long. Well, now it looks like they're going to do that, and I'm all for it. I thought that this was a great segment. This is the best segment on SmackDown on Friday night, and this woman will end up as the champion. She will end up as the SmackDown Women's Champion at some point. And they're going to continue these vignettes. There's going to be another one coming up on television this week. But it was tremendous. It was night and day from the stuff that she was doing before. Gimmicks can be fine. But sometimes the best thing to do is just let someone tell their real story and be who they are. Now, over on NXT this week, they had more of a post-WrestleMania Raw crowd than the post-WrestleMania Raw did. These fans in the PC were in full rebellion on Tuesday. They chanted, "We want Ziggler" at Bron Breakker when he was trying to cut a promo, having just won the championship back. There were chants of, "You deserve it" for the new North American champion, Cameron Grimes, that were then followed by chants of, "No, you don't." I mean, why would you want to pick on Cameron Grimes? What kind of evil SOB would go out there and say that Cameron Grimes does not deserve to be the champion? He just won the title for his deceased father. But you had back and forth chants for him. There were chants of, "That was stupid," after the latest stupid angle with Duke Hudson and Dexter Lumis and Indy Hartwell and Persia Parada. I fully agree with that, by the way. I think that that entire thing is stupid. So I was with the crowd on that one. And in one night, they rushed through a match between Bron Breakker and Walter for the NXT Championship. They had Breakker pin him clean in the middle of the ring because, as we would find out later, they had already decided, probably at the last minute, they had already decided that he was going up to SmackDown. I wonder when exactly they were informed. Shawn Michaels and them were informed that, hey, we're taking Walter and we're taking Bartel. I wonder when they found out about that decision, because even Eichner walking out on his partner because Imperium had a match with the Creed brothers and they lost. And just in the middle of the match on a miscommunication, Eichner decided to just desert his team and walk to the back. Everything just felt like, okay, it's being rushed. Something happened, something changed. Because Walter got a win at Stand and Deliver over LA Knight, and I thought that if we were going to see anybody on SmackDown Friday night or Raw, it would be LA Knight. I still don't know why he's toiling away in NXT. There was no LA Knight, no sign of him at all on television this week. In fact, I'm hearing rumors that they might want him as a fucking manager. Not that he couldn't be a great manager, he's got the mouth for it, but my God, that's what you have in mind for LA Knight? It's Adam Cole all over again. No LA Knight on TV this week, and yet Walter beat him, and then Walter went to SmackDown. And there was no LA Knight, so LA Knight lost to somebody who ended up leaving the brand. Usually it's the other way around. If they know somebody is leaving, they'll have him, you know, do the job for the other guy. Very weird. Very weird. But now we know why they rushed through the match between Breakker and Walter. They had opened the show with Walter interrupting a Bron Breakker promo, and the challenge was issued and the match was made. Breakker said, sure, let's do it. And just like that, we had our third NXT championship match in the span of 3 days. That has to be a record in terms of how many times the NXT title has been defended in such a short period of time. After the match where the Creeds beat Imperium, the Creeds were attacked by their mystery stalkers that have been stalking them in recent weeks, turned out to be the former NXT UK Tag Team Champions, Pretty Deadly. Elton Prince and Kit Wilson. Kit. They named this man after David Hasselhoff's car from Knight Rider. Well, the timing is good, I'll say that. If they're calling up Imperium, And with MSK being no more, they're going to need new tag teams. Boy, this was a bad time to call up Imperium if they would have known they were losing MSK. I liked Solo Sikoa in his promo when he came out to confront Cameron Grimes. He referenced his bloodline and how, you know, we know all about championships. And he challenged Cameron Grimes to a match for the North American title. You know, there's no need to shy away from it. Everybody knows that he's the third Uso, so, you know, I like that line. It's a little nod to his family tree. Duke Hudson and Dexter Lumis, they went to a double countout in their match when their girlfriends got involved. And they all ended up rolling around with each other on the floor outside the ring after the bell. This program sucks. Seriously, this is awful. 3 days after winning the NXT Women's Tag Team titles, Dakota Kai and Raquel Gonzalez were champions no more. I did forget, when I talked about SmackDown, I forgot to mention the fact that Raquel, she had a very brief segment on SmackDown on Friday. It was to introduce her in a backstage promo. She was interrupted by Los Lotharios. They wanted a kiss. She told them to buzz off. Raquel Gonzalez is now Raquel Rodriguez. Why? I don't know. Now, Gonzalez, I believe, is her real last name, but Raquel is not, I don't believe. Her name is Victoria. So, like, Raquel Gonzalez is not her real name. So why they felt the need to change it, I have no idea. This is probably the least offensive name change they've ever done. It's not a big deal. But the fact that they even felt they had to do it is just comically ridiculous to me. It literally just changing things for the sake of saying that we have to change things. That's all that is. But she was still Raquel Gonzalez on NXT Tuesday night. And they won the tag team titles at Stand and Deliver. And they lost them right back to Gigi Dolin and JC Jane on Tuesday. The match on Tuesday I thought was better than the one they had in front of that half-empty building on the kickoff show on Saturday. Wendy Chu walked out to the ring in the middle of it for reasons, I guess. And she got her ass knocked into the ring steps by Mandy Rose, who the distracted referee, while he was arguing with Mandy, had him or her, was it him or her? I don't remember. Referee was distracted, and they chop blocked, the heels did, Raquel's injured knee from behind, and Toxic Attraction got the win with their Toxic Shock finish. They regained the titles. The last time Dakota and Raquel won those tag belts, they lost them the very same night. They didn't even have them. They never got out of the building with them. They lost them that same night to Ember Moon and Shotzi Blackheart. So at least they had a few days this time to be tag team champions. So there you go. That's how that situation worked out. Raquel, it seemed pretty obvious Raquel was headed up to the main roster. Dakota Kai is not. Dakota Kai, who many months ago had some dark matches, and it looked like maybe she was going to get the call up, ended up not getting the call up. She's not going anywhere. I'm going to start calling her South Dakota. You know, Raquel went up north. She got the call up. I'm going to start calling her South Dakota because I feel like she's going to be stuck down there for life. But South Dakota will be challenging Mandy Rose for the NXT Women's Championship this Tuesday. They had a made man ceremony in the ring that the fans shit on with AJ Galante. He was back again. He was in Tony D'Angelo's corner on Saturday for the Stand and Deliver match against Tommaso Ciampa. He was back with him again this time. If you don't know who AJ Galante is, look him up. I'm not even getting into it again. But this was a ceremony to crown Tony D'Angelo as the new Don of NXT. I guess that would make him Don Tony, I guess you would say. Galante forgot his lines at one point. The crowd let him have it. They got Chance of Boring. He presented D'Angelo with a ring to wear on his pinky finger. This was a waste of time. Bron Breakker against Walter for the NXT Championship. This was a great battle. Maybe the best of Bron's career so far. There was a big boot. There was a big boot in this match. My God, the boot that Walter mowed him down with. Damn near looked like he took the kid's head clean off his shoulders. They told a story with Breakker trying to get Walter up for the military press into the power slam, but he had an injured arm. He couldn't do it, but he tried. Until finally, in the end, we got the impressive sight of Bron Breakker lifting Walter up into the air, dropping him onto the shoulder for the power slam and the 1-2-3. And then after the match, Breaker's father, who they're now openly acknowledging that he is a Steiner. It took them this long. Breaker's father, who he just inducted into the Hall of Fame, Rick Steiner, appeared on the Tron, congratulating his son on his big win and talking about how proud he is of him while sweating bullets. You know, before the camera panned out, he looked like he was sitting on the toilet after eating too much rice. But the camera did pan back, and we saw Rick Steiner tied up to a chair. It wouldn't be an NXT show without a kidnapping. He was being held captive in a cage, I guess in the back somewhere, by Joe Gacy and Harland. Gacy talked about teaching an old dog new tricks, and they went off the air with that as the big cliffhanger. At least they're finally acknowledging the Steiner connection, which makes his name even goofier now. Gacy and Harland, you know, holding his father captive, and obviously they're going to move on. I presume to Joe Gacy being the one to challenge for the NXT championship and not Harland. I hope Harland is not ready for that spot. So they should go with Gacy then as the next contender. And look, they're all in on this Gacy gimmick, and he's playing it up as best he could. So I guess we'll see where the cliffhanger leads next if we're going to get more Rick Steiner on television. Maybe Scott. Maybe Scott Steiner will be on TV trying to rescue his brother, and then he'll get captured. But what a pointless show Stand and Deliver turned out to be. Looking back at it now, Dolph Ziggler retained the title over Bron Breakker, only to drop the title 2 days later. MSK won back the tag team titles, only for one half of them to be fired, and now the titles are vacant. And Raquel and Dakota won the women's tag belts, only to drop them right back to Toxic Attraction 72 hours later. What a pointless show. So we've got three title matches for Tuesday. Cameron Grimes defends the North American title against Solo Sikoa. Mandy Rose defends the women's title against South Dakota Kai. And MSK, they were to have defended their tag team titles against Grayson Waller and Sanga. But that match is now off. And there will be a different match held to decide new NXT Tag Team Champions. Let's grab some questions from you guys and get the hell out of here. You can email me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. We begin with Lee from Bishop's Stortford, England. I said to the missus after WrestleMania Saturday that Cody will be the one to dethrone Roman Reigns. And then he delivered that promo on Raw, and now I am adamant that he will win the title from Roman. What is your opinion on that? I agree. I think there's a very good chance he will. I think it's got to be either him or Drew McIntyre, but I think Cody should be the one. I agree. Anthony from Philadelphia, who is the next Drew McIntyre? Meaning what wrestler fired by WWE will go on to another promotion, make it big, change their looks, and come back to WWE to become a main event player. I mean, are we talking from people who have already been fired or that you think might eventually be fired? You know who I think has the potential to be that kind of a person? And he may never be a main event player in AEW because there's just so many people on that roster and only so many spots to go around. I think Buddy Matthews has that potential to, you know, really get over, find success, come back, and do a lot better the second time around in WWE. I mean, looks-wise, he was already in tremendous shape. Guy's cut up, you know, even before he got fired. So, you know, looks-wise, visually, I don't know that there would be much different about him, but he's somebody who I think could, and probably will, eventually come back. And will probably have more success the second time than he did the first time. But, you know, you say, who's the next Drew McIntyre? You can call it the next Cody Rhodes, because that's what Cody's doing. Cody left. He kind of reinvented himself. He got himself over. He never became world champion there. But, you know, 6 years later now, he's back. He's a bigger star than he was when he left. And he's going to be pushed probably as a main eventer. We got Adam from Brooklyn. Since both nights of WrestleMania went a combined 9 hours, can you see WWE, at the request of NBC perhaps, doing an all-day WrestleMania, similar to how the NFL has its Thanksgiving Day tradition, or the UFC has all-day fights for a stacked main card, possibly three shows totaling 3 hours each, spanning from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., 3 p.m. to 6 p.m., and finally the main card from 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. It sounds a bit ridiculous, and I recognize for you as a podcaster it'll be draining, but hey, sometimes the most fun idea starts off as a ridiculous idea. I don't see what's so fun about it. No, I don't see that happening, and I think that would be a terrible idea. There is such a thing as too much wrestling in one day. I mean, it would be like WrestleMania 2, only spreading it out over the course of the entire day. I didn't like there being an NXT matinee, and I don't like the idea of spreading out WrestleMania as an all-day event, starting at 11 o'clock in the morning. I mean, it's an interesting idea that you've presented here, but it's one that I hope never, ever happens. I don't like that idea at all. And I'm not sure what NBC, what say NBC would have in it, unless it was going to air on NBC. I mean, I guess you're thinking maybe of the Peacock connection. I don't see NBC making any kind of a request like that. I think, you know, also the other thing is, would all three of these shows be held in the same stadium? I mean, do you sell different tickets to each show? And so you got to get people out of the building and then get them back in and then get them out of the building and get them back in. I mean, logistically, that sounds like a friggin' nightmare to me. I did WrestleMania all day long back in 2000. That was the WrestleMania all-day gimmick they did, were literally 12 straight hours. They had highlights, you know, of each WrestleMania up to that point, 1 through 15. And I was such a big fan back then, I sat through pretty much all of it. I think I had maybe two bathroom breaks in the entire time, but I had the TV on. I was watching WrestleMania all day long, building up to WrestleMania 16. And then I watched WrestleMania 16, and it was a disappointment. And I said, never again will I sit through WrestleMania all day long. I'm going to keep my promise. Jason from the Bronx, which was the worst Vince McMahon stunner bump? The original in MSG or the most recent one at WrestleMania 38? The WrestleMania 38 one was very bad. You know, it turned out to be so bad it's good. Austin was laughing at it. A lot of people were laughing at it. But it was sad. You know, the first one was also so bad it's good. Watching him flop around like a fish. He just doesn't know how to take the stunner. He never did. He never got the hang of it. He never figured out how to properly take a stunner. I think the best one he ever took was probably the one that Austin gave him at Raw 25-year anniversary when they were at the Barclays Center. You know, he just went straight down for it, but it was like the least offensive-looking stunner he's ever taken, but he just never knew how to do it. But the WrestleMania 38 one was so much worse. So much for it. And then he falls into the ropes and he just looks so fucking old, like he couldn't even stand on his own 2 feet. It was awful. Loose Cannon Lopez from California. We'll end with him. Wants to know, having been to many of them, what my top three post-WrestleMania Monday Night Raws would be if I had to list them. I would probably go 2014, 2013, and 2012. I'd probably rank them like that in reverse order. These are the ones that I went to. That's probably the order I would put them in. You know, that 2014 post-WrestleMania Raw was the best Raw in years up to that point. I don't know how many years, but it was the best show in years. And it really did feel, when it was over, it felt like a true changing of the guard. Daniel Bryan out there celebrating his big title win from the night before and truly for the first time feeling like the man in that company. And there was something of an NXT invasion that night. A bunch of new faces got called up. It really did feel like the start of a new era for that company. Of course, we all know how it turned out. Didn't turn out that way. You know, I mean, if you remember, Bryan got hurt. He ended up having to surrender the titles. Cesaro's push went absolutely nowhere because, as Paul Heyman would reveal years later, they never intended to push Cesaro. They just wanted Paul Heyman on TV. They wanted somebody to pair him up with as an excuse to get Heyman on TV and keep him there while Brock went away on his little sabbatical to remind people every week that Brock Lesnar broke the streak. And just burn it into people's brains until Brock was ready to come back. They just didn't want it to fade from people's minds. Cesaro, You could have put anybody in that spot. But in a vacuum, if you look at that one night, it was a great show. And it felt like a great sign for the future. So again, you had Brian's big celebration that night out there. You had Paul Heyman not only coming out later in the show and Cesaro revealing himself as a Paul Heyman guy, which got a big reaction. We were all so excited to see that. But earlier in the night, the promo that Paul Heyman cut when he was in the ring with Brock, that was the post-streak WrestleMania promo, is still, I think, probably my favorite Paul Heyman promo. That or maybe that little, you know, kind of work shoot that he cut on Vince McMahon on SmackDown before the Survivor Series show in 01. But this is one of his greatest works, is that promo that night. And I also loved it when he looked over and saw Lawler and Cole and referred to them. I think he referred to them as John Bradshaw Layfield and those two things that call themselves announcers. And then he mocked Hogan for calling it the Silver Dome instead of the Superdome. But that whole promo was just a masterclass. So that promo was on the show. The Wyatt family, even though Bray did the job to Cena the night before, the Wyatt family went out there. They got a tremendous reaction in their six-man tag. They were wrestling John Cena, Big E, and Sheamus. Orton and Batista, they aligned that night. That was the first sign of an Evolution reunion that was coming. The Shield went babyface at the end of the show. Paige made her debut that night. She beat AJ Lee to win the women's title her first night in. And that was also the final appearance on television of the Ultimate Warrior. And how fucking eerie is it to look back on that? The man is standing in the middle of the ring. He does not look well at all. But he's in the middle of the ring cutting this promo, talking about how one day every man breathes his final breath and his heart beats its final beat. And then the next day he drops dead. I'll never get over how eerie that was. But to have been there for that, that was still, you know, looking back on it, that was obviously a memorable moment. So that whole Raw was, it was something else. I got to put 2014 at the top. I would say 2013 next, because the Dolph Ziggler Money in the Bank cash-in, I don't think I've ever been in a building with a crowd that reacted in that way. It was amazing. Just for that moment alone, it was amazing. And then 2012, Brock Lesnar coming back at the end of the show after an 8-year absence. And the reaction, I remember the reaction. It stands out in my mind. The reaction to Daniel Bryan losing in 18 seconds to Sheamus the night before. And the constant yes chant. When they went off the air that night, they did, I think it was a 10-man tag. And Bryan came out for the 10-man tag, because Brian was not on the show on Raw that night, like in a match or anything. He had maybe a quick backstage segment, but he didn't really do anything. But he came out for the post-match after the show went off the air. And my God, you know, this is the first time I looked around and saw all the fingers going up for the yes chant. It was like something I'd never seen before. And so that was something special. So yeah, I think I would rank them in that order. I'm telling you, there were some really fun Raw shows to be part of back then. And now, you know, it's I don't know. This was the first Raw after WrestleMania in 3 years with fans. Last year, there were no fans. The year before, there were no fans because of the pandemic. So this was like the first one in a few years. And it really just didn't feel like anything out of the ordinary. It just felt like any other Raw. A few new faces like Cody, but that was about it. So anyway, you can email me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. I will do my best to answer your questions, either directly or on the show. And even if I don't, just know that I do read everything you send me, and I appreciate your feedback. And you can follow me on Twitter @solemonster, @thesolemonster on Instagram. We are going to be back on YouTube. Do subscribe there, because there's always stuff going on YouTube, especially if you're a YouTube channel member. I got more stuff planned for our channel members on YouTube, bonus content. But I'll be live Wednesday night after Dynamite. We'll talk Joe and Suzuki on AEW Dynamite. Not live on Friday because I will be at the Hog Show. And if you are in the New York area, do stop by and say hello. House of Glory coming back to the NYC Arena. If you are going to be celebrating Passover later in the week, I wish you all a happy Passover, a happy holiday. I'm going to be back with you next Sunday for episode 752 of the Sala Monster Sounds Off. Have a great week. I'll see you next Sunday.
The Sala Monster Sounds Off.
Funny you bring up LA Knight. You know, LA Knight is a guy who I've spoken very highly of. Would he not be somebody that you think they could use right now on SmackDown? He's not one of their younger guys. Why is he not helping them now when they need the help? I thought developmental in NXT was building for the future. Why is a guy like that still down there? Well, you have this guy who's pretty damn good, has charisma for days, and could help you right now. So why not get him on up? It boggles the mind.
The Sala Monster Sounds Off. Each week, bursting with content. Podcasts, predictions, reviews, YouTube live streams, and more. Become a channel member for perks and follow the Sala Monster on Twitter at Sala Monster.
Sala Monster.
Sala Monster.
Sala Monster Sounds Off.